Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 87 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. Today's guest is a familiar friend of the show, Mr. Anthony Donskov. Anthony is the owner of Donskov Strength Conditioning in Columbus, Ohio, and he's the author of now two books. Number one, Physical Preparation for Ice Hockey, and number two, Physical Preparation for Ice Hockey 2, the Gain, Go, Grow Manual. Today, we are talking all about his latest book, Physical Preparation for Ice Hockey 2. Let's get right into it. Without further ado, here is Anthony Donskov. Anthony, welcome back to the Hockey Strength Podcast. How are you?
Great, thanks. Really appreciate you having me and all the fine things that you're doing to the website these days.
Absolutely. I want to start with something off topic. I want to start with poetry. Why don't you tell me how you got interested in poetry?
Yeah. I think it's important, as I found certainly as I've aged, that it's really important to have hobbies, passions away from the weight room and away from the job. And for whatever reason, I found that as a young coach, writing was that for me. It was a way to relieve. It was a way to express myself. It was a way to, I think at times isolation is a gift. And for me, it was a way to communicate. And actually I found myself as I've aged, I can communicate sometimes better with my pencil than I can with my mouth. So it was something that continued to evolve. I still do it to this day. Actually, I make time to do it. I read an unbelievable book a little while ago called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And the first page is still highlighted, and a picture of it's in my cell phone. And it says, there's a secret that real writers know that wannabe writers don't. And the secret's this: the hard part's not writing. The hard part's sitting down to write. And what prevents us from doing that is resistance. And I think whether you're writing a book, whether you're writing a PhD or a dissertation for a class or poetry, it takes a lot of delayed gratification. It takes a lot of patience. And it takes a lot of time. And those things in this day and age sometimes are lacking because we all want microwave fixes for certain things. So for me, poetry has always been that escape. Writing has always been that escape. And it just gives me an outlet away from the strength and conditioning facilities.
How do you think writing poetry has strengthened your communication skills, maybe written communication skills like writing prose or as a coach?
Yeah, that's another great question. I certainly think it has. I also think age does that to you. When you get in and you're involved in the profession for many, many years. Now this is going on 17 for me. So I think you realize that, I think if you were to ask me and I was on your podcast 10, 15 years ago, and you said, Anthony, why do people come to your facility? And I say your facility, our facility, because we have several coaches and that operate within our walls. But I'd say to you, Dave, we got the best programming in the world. You know, we've got this, this, and this. And do I believe our programming separates us? Of course I do. But really, I think why people come to our facility is the people. It's communication, it's care, it's concern, it's passion, pulse, and purpose. So I think poetry has helped me with that. I don't know. And I also think age has helped me with that. As you can probably tell, we're less than 10 minutes into our communication, and another quote that I'm going to give you. I read this, I think it was in the Talent Code, and I could be wrong. And they were talking about creating environments, and it said that they were using gardening as an analogy, and I'm going to use coaching in place of gardening. But they said, great coaches are a lot like gardeners. Gardeners don't grow flowers. They create an environment for flowers to grow. So I believe, as I've aged, that's, I don't like that term soft science with communication. I think it's being able to have emotional intelligence, to talk to people, to know when to cue, when not to cue, to know when to allow a cooperative process within the programming environment, and more of a dictatorial process or a directive process is an art. And I think it's also a science. And I think that helps build trust and love. And when you get trust and love in a program, you can have a great program. And if an athlete doesn't believe in it, you get average results. And you can have a subpar program. And when athletes believe wholeheartedly, whether it's placebo or not, you get great results. So communication is extremely important. Long-winded answer of saying, I think poetry has certainly helped scaffold that. I think age, though, has helped put the bricks on it.
I also am a big fan of Pressfield's work, The War of Art. Even if you're not a writer, I would definitely recommend this short little book. You can literally read it in like maybe 45 minutes.
Well, that's another thing too that I would tell the young coaches that listen to this. I would say in the past 2 to 3 years, I don't know if I've read a strength and conditioning book in terms of programming, but every book I've read has something to do with strength and conditioning, whether it's philosophy, whether it's art, whether it's communication and leadership. Those books can all be applied to our craft if we look deep enough.
One other thing I want to ask before we move on to your new book. Something that I really admire about you as a coach is your framework for solving problems and your processes for getting outcomes with your athletes. So I'm gonna quote the book from you. Our programs are hypotheses to be tested, not treasures to be guarded. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah. I mean, the whole goal in science is not to defend anything. It's to refute. And that's built on failure. So the moment you prove yourself wrong fastest, you can hopefully find a better theory or better solution to your problems. And I think as a young coach, it was opposite for me. You know, I want to defend what I knew and these are the results, this is that. And the reality is I didn't even have an error eliminator to know what was working and what's not. So they are educated guesses at best. What is a theory? It's a conjecture. It's opinion with incomplete information. And it's the game of science is never ending. There is no finish line to it. Again, the goal is to do your best to poke holes in your own ideas, to grow as a practitioner and evolve your programming accordingly. So I think if we as a cradle of coaches can embrace that, I think we'll evolve as a practice. And that, again, is all hinged upon failure as opposed to success.
That reminds me, it's very similar to what, going back to a non-strength conditioning book that has to do strength conditioning, Principles by Ray Dalio, and he calls this radical open-mindedness, where you're never stuck in your beliefs. How do you deliberately challenge what you believe? Is it talking with other coaches? Is it reading books? Is this something you consciously do, or does it just kind of happen?
Another great question. How do I challenge what I believe? I think you can do that several different ways. I use the term error eliminators. For me, those are KPIs. I think that sometimes is thrown around as a fancy word. What are the key performance indicators of your sport? What best correlates to hockey? Believe it or not, not many off-ice motor abilities correlate to hockey. Jumping and sprinting are probably your top, and they're moderate at best at times, right? Sometimes we find they're low correlates. Sometimes we find they're moderate. Hockey's played on the ice. The ice is a near frictionless environment. Skating and running are very different abilities. Having said that, we look at what the literature says. We create KPIs based on what correlates strongest with those abilities, and we measure and manage those. So that's a way to find failure in your program. Talking with your athletes certainly is. I can tell you, a wise coach once told me a long time ago, working with professional athletes is very different than working with 12-year-old Tommy. One is more of a directive approach, and one is a cooperative approach. Coaching is a lot like parenting. So for our pro players, you can bet your bottom dollar that I'm asking them, how do you feel? How do you feel about that being in your program? Any feedback for me? Hey, how has this worked for you in the past? If I revise this, how would that make you feel? Again, this cooperative approach breeds a understanding, trust. And like I said before, I don't care if you call it placebo or not. Many times what I have found through trial and error is that the perception of the program may be more important than the program itself. So that's another way to error eliminate. Talking to colleagues. Hey, look, I'll say, like, when you have communication within your environment, that's less hierarchical and more heterarchical, and people feel comfortable speaking their minds and challenging it in a really fruitful way. That's growth right there. The growth of knowledge comes in the modification of previous knowledge. So you have to have that communication within your coaches. A group that I think I tried to rob and do from is Altus. Like, look at their poolside chats. Look at the communication they have amongst coaches. People challenge people constructively. They offer better solutions. They offer better explanations. And no one's too proud to say, wow, that's a good point. You know, I might have to change that. I might have to tinker with it, experiment with it, manage and measure it, and see if that creates a better outcome. So there's a lot of different ways to error eliminate: subjective, objective. I think putting those together will certainly evolve not only your programming, but you know, whatever it is that you're seeking to get better at.
Yeah, this is one of those concepts, approaches to thinking that'll improve literally everything you do, from conversations with loved ones, friends, pretty much everything.
Absolutely.
Let's transition to your new book. So I have it right here, Physical Preparation for Ice Hockey 2, The Gain, Go, Grow Manual, subtitle, Programming for High Performance Hockey Players. Tell me the moment where you knew you had to write this book.
Well, I was asked, I think it was 2 years ago, it might now have been three. I was asked to speak at the NSCA Hockey Clinic. It was awesome. Got to have a chance to spend the weekend with some good friends and share ideas. And I remember being asked to speak and thinking, okay, what do I want to speak about? You know, what do I want to speak about? And I thought, well, you know, there are differences in how we train what I consider our high performance hockey players and then how we would train, our youth hockey players. I thought, you know, maybe I can expand and get in a little bit into the philosophy as to the differences. I had the opportunity to give that lecture, and then, I still kept receiving over the years questions about it. And I thought, you know, maybe an hour wasn't enough time to really dig deep into the whys behind why we do things for our higher performance hockey players with higher training ages. And perhaps this book would be a platform for me to better expand it. You know, the book in and of itself, the last chapter is really the Gain, Go, Grow method, but the majority of the book is really, you know, the philosophy behind that method and how to better think critically, be a better scientist, be a better coach. And then obviously the differences, the nuances between high performers and sheer beginners, and then how we program accordingly.
Yeah, let's dive in. I want to ask a specific question about one of those latter chapters. Could you elaborate on the need or maybe the lack thereof, the need for variability in training elite hockey players?
Yeah, I think variability obviously is something that we can manipulate as coaches, right? We have acute programming variables. And I think I stated in the book, I can give you my experience with variability. Our variability for our professional athletes, we have few working exercises, consistent loading, and our micro manages or dictates our macro. I view our programming as really a scientific experiment. We have independent variables and we have dependent variables. Independent variables are all of our acute programming variables, and our dependent variable is the adaptation that we're trying to solicit from the athlete. If we have too many independent variables, then we don't know what works and what doesn't. We don't know what got us our result. So our variability for our professional athletes may come in some minor changes. It might be a stance. It might be bar thickness. It might be the velocity that we're using on the lift. It might be the tempo that we're using. So, a trap bar deadlift's an example of a lift that may be in a program the lion's share of the summer, but the variability within that lift might be stance, it might be tempo, it might be grip, et cetera. So variability is a little bit different than young Tommy, who needs, he might be a hinge, a totally different exercise. He needs to be exposed to repetition, different stressors, progressive overload, et cetera. So our advanced level athletes have that variation. It just comes in smaller pieces and smaller bite-sized pieces, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and like you said, that kind of goes off what you built on this is a hypothesis. Like this is an experiment. And if we change too much at once, then how are we going to know what we're experimenting with?
Absolutely. I quoted this because it was one of those moments that kind of changed me. I remember listening to the Robbie Bork podcast, and they were interviewing Buddy Morris. I just like to hear Buddy Morris speak. And he said, You know, a basic program works for a beginner athlete and an advanced athlete for very different reasons. You know, for the beginner athlete, they need progressive overload. They need, variability. They need time under tension, and they need that consistently. For advanced level athlete, how they're going to get better at their sport is playing their sport. I mean, if you want to be an elite guitar player, you have to play the guitar. You know, no one takes the stance that, hey, you know, we're going to take the entire summer off and we're going to strengthen your index finger and your pinky finger. And I don't want you playing the guitar. And then, you know, when the summer ends, let's go back to your big musical symposium or whatever it may be. No, you got to play the guitar. So a simple program is great for an advanced level athlete. It shouldn't compete. It should complement what they do on the ice. And for them to get better, their sport is number one.
Yeah, I love this because it kind of goes against what we normally would. I'll speak my experience. When I think of NHL players or top level players training, I'm thinking like, oh, they must be doing like, they must have tons of technology hooked up to them. They must like basically be robots. And what you're saying is basically like, well, maybe it's not as complex as it needs to be.
Yeah, I think you have to look at it almost like a big swimming pool. That's your adaptation reserve. And look, our professional hockey players, it's not like they're on the ice all summer long, getting skated and getting conditioned. But for them to continue to refine their skills, they do have touch points on the ice for skill work. That comes at a physiological cost. That takes water out of the pool. For me, when I look at it from a coaching standpoint, that right there is the most important in getting them better. So as a strength and conditioning coach, how can I use that? And then how do I plan a program around that, right? So for me, I look at that and say, okay, they're going to be on the ice. So that's going to affect the frequency in which we train. Also, all of these guys have high training ages. They've been exposed to progressive overload for 6+ years. So for us to really stimulate some sort of adaptation, they need more intensity. Okay, if they need more intensity, they need more rest. Okay, I like the idea of 3 times a week for our frequency. We must have at least 1 or 2 or 3 days of low-end work to allow them to recover from the stress that we're imposing on them. But again, when I look at it, I think sport first, stress from sport first. If they're going to get better, they're going to get better on the ice. How can I complement that? Even though it's the off-season, I want them to focus on their skills that got them the big dance. And that should be the number one priority. The weight training is still very, very important. I'm not downplaying the importance of strength and conditioning by any means, but I found out as I've aged as a coach, I may not be as important as I think I am.
I'll give some more recommended reading there. Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday.
Yeah, I read that book. Great book.
What's the experiment of, we're talking about experiments and hypotheses. What is the gain, go, grow experiment?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's really attempting create a micro cycle that's sustainable for professional hockey players, where the micro dictates the macro. So we keep things very, very simple. Things are very highly complemented, meaning that our jump training or our energy system training and our theme, quote unquote, theme of the day are very, very, I say similar in nature, and I can expand upon that. And then I always say this, and I got this from Mladen Jovanovic. I think one of the cornerstones of the program is, and I shouldn't say just Mladen. I think I also had the opportunity to read a lot of John Kiley's work, and it really, really changed the way I thought, in specifically his article, 21st Century Periodization. I thought it was an unbelievable article. Long story short, it's a 1 divided by N heuristic, which simply states that if I were to give you $1 million and have you put it in the stock market, more than likely you wouldn't buy just 1 stock, because if you made a mistake in your investment, you're going to lose big. Okay. Well, that investment to us in as strength and conditioning coaches is our proposed adaptation, what we're trying to go after. The reality is clouds and clocks, right? One is very, very complicated. One is very complex. We can take a clock apart. We can put it back together. That's complicated. A cloud, every one of them is very, very different. It's very complex. Well, so is adaptation. You and I might be on the exact same strength and conditioning program, and we might get very, very different results. And John Kiley eloquently stated that, and then used a lot of the research and his references to facilitate his point. So back to the point of this 1 divided by N and this investment type heuristic. Well, if we're going to make a big mistake as or a mistake as coaches, I'd like to balance my mistake. I'd like to diversify more my portfolio. So if I do make a mistake, it's not a huge and it's not a big mistake, right? So there goes the strength block, the hypertrophy block, the power block. Do you see where I'm going at? What we're doing with those blocks is, and again, this all works linear periodization. This all works for young athletes. I'm not suggesting it doesn't, but what we're trying to do with our advanced level athletes is we're trying to balance a portfolio. So if we do make a mistake, it's not a big mistake. So our gain day, back to our programming, is really a max type effort day. And I say max effort, and I better watch how I use that. Certainly not West Side Barbell max effort method, but our rep counts, the goal is to move heavy weight slow. Okay. Our acceleration is done on that day, and our high impulse plyos are done on that day. Okay. The next day of the week would be a Wednesday, and that would be our go day. Our go day is we start off with what we call our Altus Rudiment Series warm up. It's a really, really pop, short, quick warm up off the ground to really facilitate the tissues and prepare them for sprinting and build stiffness within the system. We have our true stretch shortening plyometrics that day. We hook up our gym awares and we measure bar speed that day. And prior to the lift, we're doing our timed sprints that day. So you see how everything complements itself, like almost like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, as opposed to, you know, peanut butter and pickles, right? Everything's trying to be highly complemented. And then specifically on the last day of the work week, for specific reasons, we have our work capacity day. And typically, that's lifting submaximal weight for time. It's a very tough day. It is coupled with more of a lateral type bounding or a higher impulse, even higher impulse work where there's larger contacts from a plyometric or a jump standpoint. And we would be either working change of direction that day, or as a season progressed and we're getting closer to training camp, it might be more of kind of like a repeat sprint day where there's slight acidosis. So the goal is increase work capacity. And it's done that day because the athletes have, you know, 48 to 72 hours to recover from. The Tuesday, Wednesday of that program are both low days. So that can be done tempos. It can be aerobic circuits. And the goal there is to recover from the previous day's stressors. So there's essentially 3 days in frequency, but there's also 2 low days for recovery. And that's really the engineering of the gain, go, grow model. And that, with the exception of our tissue remodeling block for the first 2 weeks of the summer, that model carries us through the entire summer until our athletes go back to training camp.
What differences have you seen using the gain, go, grow model compared to like what you were doing before, which is more typical linear periodization?
We're ranking and measuring. We're getting better marginal gains. I think it's really difficult, right? With high caliber athletes, I don't want them focusing on anything too laser focused, right? The moment the measure becomes a target, it fails to be a good measure. So we're looking at our KPIs. Every athlete that trains at our facility gets a KPI every microcycle. And we're looking for marginal gains. We're looking for improvements. You've seen those with this method. We have talked to our athletes from a subjective standpoint. They have more energy to focus on what they want to do on the ice, and which you and I spoke about previously, which certainly is the most important because that's where they're going to make their money, for lack of a better word. So it's a combination of our KPIs that we're tracking and testing, and then it's a combination of the subjective feedback that we get from our athletes. I'm fond of saying it's not rocket science, but it's exercise science. So those are the objective and subjective measures that we use.
So the book, everybody, is Physical Preparation for Ice Hockey 2, the Gain, Go, Grow Manual, subtitled Programming for High Performance Hockey Players. So you can get that now on Amazon. Anywhere else? Do you sell like independently or is it just on Amazon?
I think the book is also on Author House, the website, but Amazon certainly would probably be the best place to get it. Yep.
Cool. So if you don't have that book by now, then definitely check that out. Anthony, in April, your father, Paul Donskov, passed away after a long battle with cancer, and you and your family have decided to start the Paul Donskov Legacy Scholarship. So I want to give you this opportunity to talk about what that scholarship means to you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been a really difficult time for our family. We have a really, really close family, and my dad was our leader, fearless leader. And yes, unfortunately, April 15th, 2020, my dad succumbed to lung cancer. We started as a family, the Paul Donskoff Legacy Scholarship, to honor my father's name. The Blue Jackets Foundation has teamed up with us. And the goal of this scholarship is really to provide youth athletes with incentives and monetary incentives to reach their goals of education after they're done their high school hockey careers. My dad was always a huge, huge proponent of development. He put the fun in fundamentals. He was an amazing hockey person. I'm obviously biased because he's my father and my hero, but pioneer, instrumental in growing hockey in Columbus, Ohio. So he was also very passionate about education. He was also passionate about giving back, and he was passionate about providing unique experiences, life-changing experiences to youth players that came through the Columbus hockey organization. So this scholarship in his name will provide funds to, again, high school students looking to gain education once they graduate.
First, I just want to send my condolences to you and your family. And where can people learn more about the scholarship?
Yeah,
and how can they donate?
I'll tell you what, it might be easier if we could put a link in the show notes. Do you have a link in the show notes?
We can definitely put links in show notes.
Perfect. I will provide that for you. And that link will take you right to the Blue Jackets Foundation page where you can make a donation. And if you're able to, that would be a fantastic thing. I know our family and my father would be very honored.
Anthony, I think this is the perfect place to wrap up. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know gyms are starting to reopen. You're getting busier by the day, by the hour scheduling. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Any closing thoughts for our audience?
Oh, just thanks for the opportunity. You know, this is an unbelievable profession. We've got great people in it. And again, thank you for what you're doing for the sport of hockey. And I wish you guys continued success.
All right, Anthony, thank you. We'll talk soon. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. You can find links to everything Anthony and I talked about in the show notes, including a link to donate for the Paul Donskoff Legacy Scholarship. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and I will see you soon.